All right, I think we got a good enough crowd in here, so I'll go ahead and get started. Obviously, that was a huge win for the Mavericks, a stressful win for the Mavs. But I think if you take a step back from those final seconds of the game, I think that was an incredible effort by the team, especially in the second half, to really resurrect what was a pretty dark first half against the Orlando Magic, who were on the second night of a back-to-back, having played at home against Phoenix last night. They made a comeback in that game to beat Phoenix by 15 points, riding high off a win against one of the hottest teams in the NBA. Coming to Dallas, obviously the Mavericks beat Orlando earlier in the season when they were on the second night of a back-to-back and one of their more impressive wins of the season. So coming into this one, especially looking at what the schedule is going to be these next few games, Mavericks are playing at Minnesota on Wednesday, and then they come back to Dallas on Friday or Saturday, play Milwaukee, then go to Philadelphia to play the 76ers. This one was one that you needed to have because the schedule does not get any easier going forward from here. So story of this game was a pretty abysmal first half. Orlando seemed to not be missing a single shot. Anthony Black had 4 3-pointers in the first half. Paolo Banchero hitting everything. They were really the ones doing the most damage for the Mavericks. It felt like the Mavs could not get a single stop, and whenever they did, there was an offensive rebound or a foul that kind of killed the momentum. Jaden Hardy was big in the first half, I think, you know, trying to keep the Mavs connected and trying to put them back into the game. But unfortunately, on defense, the Mavericks were just listless, getting beaten down almost every time down the floor. Some of it was poor luck with Orlando's hot shooting, and some of it was just terrible effort. All that led to the Mavericks being down by 16 at halftime. It was 77-61 Orlando at half, and allowing 77 points to the 25th ranked offense on the second night of a back-to-back, just not where you want to be as a team. I know the Mavs have been dealing with a lot of injuries, but it just was an inexcusable effort in the first half. It looked like we were headed for our fifth blowout loss in the last six games. Maybe not fifth blowout loss, but fifth game facing a 15, 16 plus point deficit in these last 2 weeks. It felt like, ever since the Mavs beat the Pelicans without Luka, when Kyrie Irving and Tim Hardaway Jr. combined for 83 points. The only other game the Mavs had won since that point was against Atlanta, and that was when Luka scored 73 points. So the Mavs basically had not won a game since January 15th in which Luka didn't score 73 points. So they needed this one. The second half effort, obviously, much more inspired. They looked like a team that was desperate, that was hungry. I don't know who said what at halftime, but clearly it worked. And you could just see it from the very beginning of the second half. The Mavs came out with more effort. You could see Jason Kidd on the sidelines finally showing a lot of animation and emotion, something that we haven't seen too much this season. And I think that he's been criticized for, probably rightfully, because it really did make a difference. I mean, in the third quarter, the Mavericks really succeeded playing their zone defense. They outscored Orlando 35-12 in the third quarter, and that actually ended up being the only quarter that they won in this game because Orlando outscored the Mavs 40-35 in the fourth quarter. But that 23-point advantage in the third quarter really proved to be the difference. Tim Hardaway Jr. came alive in that quarter. I believe he had 15 in the third. Luka Doncic kind of snapped out of a rough first half and really took over in the third quarter, and in the second half he finished with 45 points, 15 assists, 9 rebounds, just one rebound shy of another triple-double. Tim Hardaway Jr. had his second highest scoring game of the season, 36 points, 8 rebounds, and he hit 5 of 9 three-pointers and was 9 for 11 from the line. So obviously needed him every bit of his scoring night. Derek Lively had possibly his best game of the season, tied a career high, I believe, of 20 points. Had 11 rebounds, was a plus 13 in this game. And Jaden Hardy, like I mentioned, 20 points, A lot of that damage coming in the first half, but he had 20 points. He was 8 of 9 from the floor, 4 of 5 from 3, 7 assists. I would say that's Jaden Hardy's best game of the season right there. It was great to see him put forth a good game. Obviously, it helps when you hit all your shots like he did today, but I think passing-wise, Jaden has really improved this season, even if his ball handling hasn't really been where it needs to be. I think he's been much better operating in the pick and roll. He found Rashawn Holmes a couple times in the first half for dunks. So that was great to see from Jaden Hardy. Needed that. Other than those guys, it was a pretty quiet scoring night, really, for everyone else on the team. Grant Williams only had 3 points, 2 rebounds, and assist. Josh Green, 2 points, 2 rebounds, and assist. Although I would argue that the 2 points he had were very critical there in the fourth quarter when Orlando was threatening to seize back momentum. Maxi Kleber had 1 point. Rashawn Holmes had 4 points. And that really is a story for this game. But, you know, I think after that Sacramento game, obviously, like, the Mavs went down by, I believe, 20 points or 22 points against Sacramento. But they did show some fight there, especially in the fourth quarter, making a comeback. But I do like to say that was a fake comeback because the Mavericks could not get the job done, and it was really too little too late at that point. Tonight, luckily, they started their comeback efforts earlier from the very beginning of the second half. And I think that second half fight that they've shown in these last two games is something that you know, they can take and hopefully build upon going forward. But again, you'd rather not play from such large deficits in these next few games, because teams like Minnesota, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, they're not going to let you come back into the game like Orlando did today, or Sacramento even did on Saturday night. So it's going to be tough for the Mavericks to, you know, to continue to build some momentum and build some continuity with all these injuries. But I guess you can try and hope that Kyrie Irving comes back within these next few games. Dante Exum, Derrick Jones Jr., if they can get those guys back. And obviously, trade deadline is coming up here in the next 9 or 10 days. So no telling what happens there. But nonetheless, a big stretch coming up for the Mavs because, like I said, Minnesota on Wednesday, then Milwaukee on – I'm just going to check right now. I don't know if it's Friday or Saturday. Give me a sec. Yeah, Milwaukee on Saturday, and then following that, Philadelphia next Monday. Brooklyn next Tuesday, and then New York on Thursday on February 8th, which is the trade deadline. So obviously a big stretch of games coming up against Eastern Conference opponents for the Mavs. So like I said, this game, a much-needed win for the Mavericks. My biggest takeaways from this one are, you know, obviously the Mavericks need Luka to do everything, especially when Kyrie Irving is out. And he did not disappoint tonight. I thought that he was, you know, he was having a frustrated game there in the first half. Orlando was playing a huge lineup, you know, with Jalen Suggs, Jonathan Isaac starting his first game in 4 years, Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, Wendell Carter Jr. That was really making life difficult on Luka, as well as a lot of the other Mavs players. And I thought Jaden Hardy was a nice spark for the Mavs in the first half. He was a nice change of pace for them and gave them some life. But like I said, unfortunately, defensively, the Mavs just weren't there. It seemed like lack of effort, lack of, you know, motivation, enthusiasm, inspiration. But credit to them for adjusting in the second half. Credit for Jason Kidd and the coaching staff for adjusting, going to zone defense. And I think what really made the difference for them defensively was that Jason Kidd was coaching them on the sideline, very vocally, very animated the entire second half. That seemed to make a difference. I mean, there's been so much made about Jason Kidd over the years, dating back to his time with Milwaukee and Brooklyn. You know, back then, obviously, there's a lot of stories about him being this you know, this tyrant, this kind of psycho that tries to play mind games with his players. And, you know, he did a lot to change his reputation over the years, going to the Lakers under Frank Vogel and learning as an assistant coach, winning a championship there. And by the time he came to Dallas, he was a much different coach. His philosophy now is much more calm. His demeanor is much more stoic during games. And I think, to his credit, players have really come to appreciate that. They like that he doesn't panic. But at the same time, when you're in kind of a rut that the Mavericks have been these last couple of weeks, you need someone to snap you out of that. And, you know, with all due respect to Luka, who I think, you know, deserves a lot of credit for his efforts these last few games, playing the kind of minutes he has, he may not always be that guy to get the most out of players in the locker room. Because, you know, from all accounts off the floor, he is more of a shy guy. You know, he shows a lot of emotion on the court, but he's more of a lead by example guy. He's not a vocal leader in the traditional sense. Same thing with Kyrie Irving. He's not necessarily a guy that's going to, you know, that's going to speak up all the time and get guys fired up. Jason Kidd has not been that, I wouldn't say either. Again, he's the type of coach at this point to, you know, to be calm and say, it's okay. Let's play through it. But at the same time, like, I think, like I said, when you're in this kind of rut, you need someone to shake you and wake you up and light a fire. And I don't know if that was Jason Kidd in the locker room today. I don't know if it was Markieff Morris, if it was Luka, if it was Tim Hardaway, who has often been a guy who's, you know, been a vocal presence for this team. Someone said something at halftime, and Jason Kidd clearly led the charge in the second half. It helped that the Mavs were defending on the side of the floor that their bench was, so, you know, Kidd could coach them through that. But I thought that switching to zone defense really got them going in the second half. Fourth quarter was your classic cardiac Mavs. You know, they gave up an 8-0 run to start the quarter, which allowed Orlando to take the lead. They traded some baskets there for the next few minutes. Luckily, the Mavericks were able to do just enough to come out on top at the end. You know, there was a potential blunder there with Jason Kidd not calling timeout when Tim Hardaway was trapped, and then Tim Hardaway got called for a travel. But all is well that ends well. And the Mavericks are victorious today by a score of 131-129, just outscoring the competition there. You know, you'd like to see a better full defensive effort, but I'm at the point of the season right now where I will take wins any way that we can get them. I think style points and wishing for defensive improvement are on the back burner for me right now. So yeah, that's really all I got about this game. We have one person requested. I will say this though, that if you're going to come up here and say we should fire Jason Kidd, I don't want to talk about that right now. Like, you can critique his coaching, but if you're just going to come up here and say fire Jason Kidd, then I would respectfully request you to step down. But we'll get Patrick up here because he's been waiting for a few minutes. Patrick, how's it going?
Oh, I'm taking a deep breath after that one.
I know, man. That was extremely stressful, and it feels like it shouldn't have been that stressful.
Yeah. So about halfway through the game, I was thinking, oh, you know, here we go with the fake comeback. But I was very impressed. It felt very gritty. I'm curious who was in the locker room that stepped up and, you know, threw the chairs around and said, you know, because clearly something had to have happened. They didn't just sleepwalk and just magically it happened. Yeah, man, I'm gonna enjoy it. I'm gonna enjoy it as much as I can. It's tough, but I mean, a comeback win like that is against this giant squad, which was, I mean, I don't know how the Magic's record is as bad. I mean, of course, I'm sure shooting, because you know they don't shoot this good like they did tonight. But yeah, I mean, a great comeback win. Can't be too mad, even with the mismanagement towards the end. Gotta be happy.
Yeah, for sure. I think you said it well. Like, I mean, you know, even though it wasn't pretty for large stretches of this game, I think you do have to appreciate the comeback effort. This is something we haven't seen from them the entire season. They have not been a team that when they go down, you have to worry about them coming back. They're very prone to getting deflated when they face these big deficits. So I think you do have to give them credit for not, you know, bending over and really just taking the challenge to heart. And yeah, that was good to see. I am curious to know who spoke up. Maybe we'll find out in the post-game press conference. But
oh, I know.
Yeah, really? If I had to bet, it would probably be Tim Hardaway or
that's what I was thinking.
or Sean Sweeney or something. Sometimes he's the guy who does it. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. Also, shout out Jaden Hardy. Dude was really nice minutes. Really glad to see that.
Yeah, Jaden Hardy was great. I mean, look, man, I think he is a – I've said this the entire year, but I just think he's a better player than what he's shown this year. Like, I saw him go toe-to-toe with the defending champion Golden State Warriors last year when Kyrie Irving was out in that game. Like, I know that he is a better player than what he's shown this year. So I was happy to see him play today.
I just feel like he can't really get into a good rhythm. So I hope he can, you know, continue, like, stack this kind of performance, because, I mean, it was awesome. It was really good minutes. So really good to see.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the issue with Hardy is, like, one is inconsistency. Like, tonight his shot was falling, so it looked great. Mm-hmm. It's the nights where his shot isn't falling where it can look particularly rough. And obviously, like, he hasn't had a consistent spot in this rotation, which hasn't helped him either. So I really don't know what his future on this team is. For all we know, this could have been the game that gets some other team, you know, to buy into him. Yeah. I don't think he's a particularly, you know, enticing asset for other teams in terms of trades, but I think you see a game like tonight and you can see something in him as a player going forward. So we'll see. But it was nice to see as a fan of Jaden Hardy, and it seems like you're one too.
Agreed, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You got anything else, Patrick?
No, that's about it.
I appreciate you coming up, man. Have a good night.
Sure. Yeah, thanks
for having me, bro. Yeah. I will bring up Alex. He's been requested here for a second. Alex, how's it going, man?
Good, good. I just want to talk about the lineups here, specifically in the fourth quarter. I really like what Jason Kidd did down the stretch. He had Luka, Tim Hardaway, and Lively. They were in pretty much most of the fourth. And he was rotating in. It was Kleba and Hardy coming in together, and Josh Green and Grant Williams. I like sticking with Josh. I want to talk about Josh for a second. I like sticking with him, even though he wasn't scoring. Like you said earlier, he had a big layup. But the thing with Josh, he just fouls so much. He has to stop reaching in and fouling. But I understand he's tenacious, and that's part of the reason we love him. He's so gritty and physical. But there was a time there towards the end, I think, I was looking to keep Lively in. I know he got hit in the face, but we really can't get a lot of rebounds when he's not in. And, okay, they drove, and I think Banchero had a layup, and we just started playing the foul game after that. But there was a time, but like a minute or 2 minutes left, I was like, man, we need Lively in there, or we're going to give up some offensive rebounds. But I don't know. I just want to get your opinion on Josh Green. And, of course, he was hot, and then today it was cold. But I really like him. I really like him. He's starting to grow into his own, and I just want to hear what you have to say about him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always kind of had a pretty – maybe not the most favorable opinion about Josh Green. I think that his play style is a little bit too chaotic and out of control for me. That being said, when he's confident – you can really see the vision with him. It's just that confidence is something that isn't there consistently. But I think what I've noticed, and this was a trend even last season, I'm sure you also noticed this too, like when he starts, he's a much more confident player than when he's coming off the bench. I mean, we all saw that game against, I believe it was the Lakers last year, where the Mavs blew a 27-point lead. Josh Green was starting up until that game, and then, you know, randomly Justin Holiday was inserted in his position in the starting lineup.
I remember that.
And Josh Green never seemed to recover from that game confidence-wise. And this season, I don't think he started. I think he was pretty disappointing to start the year, and then he got hurt. But then now that he's been starting, he's looked a lot better. And a lot of that has been because he's hitting his three-pointers now at a higher rate. I think on the broadcast they said that he's made, 16 threes over the past seven games going into this game, which is the best stretch of his career. So I think that's been one way he's looked really good. Tonight, the shot wasn't falling, but that layup was another confident move by him. And so
You
know, hopefully it's just something you can keep building on.
And he plays good defense. I want to bring up two other things, and I'll let someone else get a chance. One, shout out to Jaden Hardy, like was said, you know, struggling with his shot, but he started off hot and really battled that time when Anthony Black was hitting everything. It seemed like Jaden Hardy was kind of matching him, even though we were down. Another thing, dude, I'm really disappointed in Seth Curry. I mean, I remember his first stint in Dallas. He was hitting everything. There was a time he even had a higher three-point percentage than Steph Curry, and he was way up there in the 40s, right? And when we got him back, I always thought it was a mistake when we let him go, whether it was Philly or Brooklyn, I forget. But when he came back, I thought he was going to be amazing, and he just really hasn't had it this year. I wonder if there's anything we can do to get him going, or what your opinion on him is. Then I'll let someone else go.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anyone actually up here, so you can stay on for longer. But yeah, Seth Curry has been pretty disappointing this year. I mean, I personally didn't expect him to contribute too much. I thought he was more of a depth signing at this stage of his career. I mean, he's obviously 4 years older now than when he first signed with the Mavs back in 2019. But I did expect him to be better than he's been this year. Like, he hasn't shot the ball well. I think his numbers have been okay, but like when you watch him, it doesn't seem like he's able to consistently hit his shots. Defensively, he's a cook product. I mean, he's basically a walking foul on defense at this point in his career. So I think at this point he's just there to provide ball handling depth. I mean, that's what he's good at. And he's been able to at least absorb some ball handling minutes, like in games like tonight when Exum and Kyrie have been out. But that being said, I don't really see an avenue for him to be a consistent contributor. And I do think that if the Mavs do make a trade, there is a decent likelihood that his, $2 million salary could be used as a salary filler, because it's not a very big contract.
I agree. And I think we have to take a second here and just applaud Tim Hardaway Jr. for everything he's done this year. I mean, going into this whole year, throughout the summer, we were throwing his name out in almost every trade. Like, even me and other trade finders, I'm pretty sure all of us, right? Because of his salary. But many people aren't talking about him in trades anymore because of how good he's played, whether it's coming off the bench or starting. And I don't even know if he's still in the running for six man, because I don't know how many games you can start. But I mean, the guy, of course he's streaky, and of course he'll have his 0-for-8 games. But would he score over 30 today? And I think on the broadcast that is sixth or ninth time scoring 30 this year. So we have to, respect him for what he's done for us offensively, at least.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think say what you want about Tim Hardaway Jr. I mean, obviously consistency has been an issue with him in the past. But I think one thing about him is, like, he's going to compete. He's going to fight. He's someone who consistently shows up every game. I mean, obviously you have major issues with him defensively. Like, that's typically been a problem. And I'm of the belief that you can't really build a serious contender with him playing as much as he does. But the reality of the situation is he's a very important player for the Mavs. And until they're able to find someone who can do what he does, maybe not as well, but do it to a similar level while also providing plus defense and ball handling, I think that Tim Hardaway is going to continue to be a player that they count on to bail them out and get them going in games like this. Because, we've seen the power of the three-pointer, with no better example being tonight, right? Like, in the first half, the difference was three-point shooting. The Magic were hitting a lot of their threes, and the Mavs weren't hitting many threes. And then in the second half, that script completely flipped. And that's, being able to score the three at a high rate is what gets you back into these games. So, look, again, like, Tim Hardaway's been amazing for the Mavs this season. I mean, that Pelicans game where he had 41 points, I believe, like, he's really come through for them, bailed them out of a lot of games, which they probably would have otherwise lost. So, can't say enough good things about him. Also, I look forward to the day where we don't have to rely on him as much.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think we can all agree the Mavs are just really two pieces away, a backup center who can rebound, a Drummond type, and then a wing defender, Dorian Finney-Smith-esque. And if we can get those two things with our current roster without giving up too much, that's why, I mean, there's some Mavs fans that are of the camp that, which I think Nico might be also believing this, that, we stockpile our assets because of the rule where you can't trade, consecutive first round picks. If we don't trade, I feel like if we don't trade, make any trades or don't trade our first this trade deadline, we'll have, I don't know whether it's two or three picks to trade next year. And that can really go get a really good wing defender. So I don't know. Do you have the camp that do we trade the first or do we hold on? Of course, it depends who we get back. But are you more inclined to trading it or keeping it before this deadline?
That is a great question and something I'm thinking about too. I think, you know, my friend Dalton Trigg wrote an article about this, and I think he said it best. Like, if you can do a deal in which you can get multiple players back that can help you, I think including the 2027 first-round pick, which is currently the only pick the Mavs can trade, would be worth it. If you're trading, you know, if you're trading players plus that pick and only getting one player in return, you know, i.e. maybe like Kyle Kuzma or something, then that's something you have to think about a little bit harder. Because like you said, if the Mavericks do wait until the offseason, assuming they don't, you know, they don't miss the playoffs and they convey their pick to the New York Knicks, the Porzingis trade will have finally then been paid off in full. And we don't have to worry about that anymore. That would then mean that the Mavs could trade their pick on draft night. Oh, I guess they don't have a pick on draft night, sorry. But that would mean that they could trade their 2025 first-round pick, their 2027 first-round pick, and then their 2031 first-round pick in a potential trade. So there is some logic in that sense to hold off until the summer and, you know, then potentially look for a big trade. But again, there's no guarantee that there's that deal that's going to be available. And so if you do, you know, happen to find something here in the next, 10 days or so that you like, that includes a first-round pick that you think will make your team better this year and going forward, then I do think that it would make sense to trade it. But obviously the Mavs are in a pretty precarious spot with their draft picks because they can't afford to just miss because that would be catastrophic.
Yeah, and I was also hearing that with our salary cap too, we got to, you know, make sure if we're hit it, we have to hit on these picks. I wanted to ask you about Omax. How has he been doing in the G League, do you know? And what are his, you know, what is his timeline looking like? Of course, he's not going to be able to contribute in this playoffs, but could we see Omax with a corner three-point shot? You know, could we see Omax next year contribute kind of like Josh Green, you know?
I would hope so. I mean, I think, you know, I think say what you want about the Jason Kidd era, but one thing that he's always, and he and his coaching staff, going back to Milwaukee, what they've always been good at has been player development. I mean, they really developed Chris Middleton from like a mid-second round pick to becoming an all-star caliber talent, right? And Giannis, you can argue that was all natural talent and hard work. But, I mean, they work with him, and credit to both Giannis and Jason Kidd's coaching staff for helping develop him into a player that then ended up going on to become, you know, an NBA legend, right? So we saw it with Josh Green. I mean, going back to Jason Kidd's introductory press conference in 2021, Jason Kidd specifically mentioned Josh Green as a player that he wanted to develop. You know, you go look at Jaden Hardy last year. The Mavs took a similar development path with Jaden Hardy where, you know, he played a lot in the G League in December and January, and then by the second half of the season, he was a more regular contributor. I don't know if that's the exact plan that Omax is going to be on, but I think Omax has been playing pretty well in the G League. Like, I haven't been keeping up with the stats or anything, but I'll see it every now and then, and I'll be pretty happy with what he's done. But even in the NBA, I feel like he's shown some real flashes of a player that could contribute this year alone. I mean, I think a lot of the concern with him right now is his shooting and teams not respecting him on the perimeter, but I feel like he's more than just a shooter. Like, if he's left open, like, sure, take it, but he can also put the ball on the floor and attack the basket. And I think that's a skill where I feel like Omax can make up for his possible offensive limitations. And defensively, I think he has the instincts, he has the athleticism, the length, the ability to, you know, guard players one-on-one and also crash for rebounds. I think that's an area which he can contribute. So we'll see. But I'm at this point, it seems like Omax may be a project for year one and could contribute next year.
Yeah, you were talking about player development, and I was just watching the game today, and I had a theory. I know Dirk always said, you know, and he said in a recent interview, like, he's going to stay around the game. And, you know, of course, he always has an open door policy with the Mavs. I have a feeling this past summer, Dirk and Luka got in the gym. Because Luka's been adding a few things to his repertoire. I've seen, of course, He's going to the Dirk fadeaway more on the high post area, but he's also working on the right side of the three-point line. Of course, his patented step back from the left, but he knows how to counter that. And even today, he hit a few from the right side of the three-point line. But I also wanted to mention that I feel like, maybe before we went on, when we're doing our bad stretch, maybe four or five games, last five games, before the past two, three games, Lively's been open on a lot of these rim rolls, and he's been kind of getting frustrated and getting out of the game. But the past two, three games, Luka and the team's really been finding Lively. And I think that helps just get him engaged, get him, you know, keep him out of foul trouble, keep him present, and, of course, get us points because he's so tall and long that he's really open on a lot of these roles. And the past five games, of course, they've been finding him. In the beginning of the season, they did it very well. But towards the middle, we really kind of lost it. And I like how we've been doing it the past few games.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Lively has been really good these last two or three games, especially. I agree with you that it seemed like during that losing streak to LA, like the Lakers, Boston, and Phoenix, it seemed like they, you know, he had kind of been taken out of those games. But he's once again shown over these last three games that he's like absolutely a game changer for the Mavericks. And even just like taking his basketball skills out of the picture for a second, like just like the energy and like edge that he provides. You saw it today, like he had some huge dunks that got the crowd going, got the team going. He's like a vocal presence on the floor. He has a youthful energy that I think that this team kind of needs. So, you know, and then obviously you combine that with the fact that he's good at basketball, right? So I think he's absolutely a player that has to be featured going forward. And, you know, I think he's our third best player when you consider everything that he brings on a nightly basis.
Yeah, definitely. And if we can just start getting Maxey to hit some threes, I mean, Maxey has good IQ. He sets good screens. He plays, you know, good defense, and he can box out every now and then. But I mean, if he can start hitting his threes, that'd be really good.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll ever come around for him, but we'll see. I mean, maybe it's just going to take some consistent game reps for him to sort of get back into NBA game shape. Because as we know, there's being able to play, and then there's game shape. So I think he probably has just crossed the double-digit mark in games played this season. So we'll see. But at the same time, I don't think he's a player you can rely on. I think that the lineups with him at center are absolutely cooked, and that's not something that you can run, because it seemed like, you know, the Mavs went to that lineup to start the fourth quarter today, and that's when Orlando went on an 8-0 run almost immediately. He's just very flat-footed at this point in his career, and the jump shot isn't there. So he'll have his moments, but I don't know. If you can start hitting his threes again, that would be great. I agree.
I agree with you. I don't like him as a center. I like him with Lively. I think that's much better. I don't know. I don't, just for the offense and defense, honestly. Do you have any timeline on and returns for Exum and Jones and Kyrie?
I wish I did. Honestly, no clue with any of them. I mean, it sucks for Exum because he came back, and after two games, he's already hurt again. And, you know, the thing with, like, knee soreness is that it could be anything. It could be one of those things where they need to manage it, because if he exerts himself too much, it could potentially turn into a significant injury. So I'm hoping that's not the case. But anytime I see something like knee soreness, I get a little bit nervous. Jones, I think, hopefully will come back within the next few games. I mean, it was kind of a miracle that he was not immediately ruled out for the Sacramento game, because his injury against Atlanta looked pretty bad. I thought he broke his wrist, but turns out it was a sprain. But we don't know like what degree of sprain it is. But I think given that he was questionable, it seems hopeful that he can be back in the near future. And then Kyrie, I don't know, man. No one ever knows with him. It's just been unfortunate how many injuries he's had to deal with this year. At the same time, that is kind of how he's been his entire career. He's not typically been the most durable player. And I know that the injuries he's suffered this year have not necessarily been – they've been kind of like freak injuries. Like, obviously, the ankle injury that he had when Dwight Powell fell on him. That was something, you know, you can't control, and that would probably take out most players for an extended period of time. The thumb sprain, again, it's kind of unfortunate that he said that he didn't think he would miss any time, and he's now missed four games. So it's just as
I have a theory, though. Hear me out. You might agree with it. Kyrie and Luka, between the two of them, have this load management arrangement where they want to both be very healthy at the playoffs. So when they play teams that they should beat, a la Portland, Orlando, they tend to let one or the other just go crazy. And then when we play them, so I guarantee, of course, Luka, go figure, we knew he was ready for the Laker game. This Bucks game that's coming up, I'm pretty sure Kyrie will be ready. I've always seen them do this where they just sit out against, one of them sits out against a trash team, and they're both there ready to play a good team. What do you think?
I mean, I think that definitely factors into their plan for them. I mean, I think they're definitely taking a cautious approach with both Luka and Kyrie whenever they suffer any sort of injury. I mean, we saw Shams Charania say something like that a while ago about how they're very cautious with both of them, and the goal is to have them both healthy for the playoffs. And so I do think that whenever one of them is injured, if they see a lesser opponent on the schedule, they may not feel as pressed to bring them back for that game. But at the same time, I do think that they'd rather both have them on the court as much as possible, because, you know, you want them to develop some chemistry. You'd rather it not be, you know, my turn, your turn, ISO ball. But at the same time, if that's how they have to play in the playoffs, then you do have two of the best players to be able to do that.
Yeah, 100%. I 100% agree with that. My turn, your turn is not the way to go. If no one else is requesting to speak, I'll say this. I love, like, the actions, like backdoor cuts. We started to do it a few times. I was screaming it out for it at the end of last year. It's something we never did. You know, it was just my turn, your turn. If Luka didn't have the ball, he would just stand in the corner. And I've heard Luka even say in interviews or stuff like, okay, he would draw a defender away. But if you see Golden State and what they do with Curry, you're able to get such easy buckets. I mean, all Luka's buckets last year and parts of this year, just such tough buckets. But, you know, credit to Jason Kidd. He's instituted some of those cuts. I think we've seen it a lot with Dwight Powell being the one to hit the backdoor cuts, with whether it's Kyrie or Luka. But just a few times, keeping the defense honest so they're not cheating those screens and getting, you know, both players involved even off the ball is so smart. It's something Rick Carlisle would have done, you know, late in games, you know, a team's looking for the best player to get the ball, but a Tim Hardaway Jr. or a Grant Williams makes a backdoor cut and they get a layup. It's something that Rick would have done. And I think another thing I'll say Rick did that very well, he would claim responsibility for losses. If there was a loss, he'd be like, I didn't have him prepared enough. And I just wish Jason would do that. You know, he's done a good job this year, but I just wish he'd do those two things a little better.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think that the offense has looked better this year, even though I don't think their numbers are as good as they were last year for various reasons. But I think some of that is they're playing with more pace now. They're not as much of a half-court team. So naturally, sometimes that makes you not score as efficiently. But I do like that they've gone more away from like the typical high pick and roll drive and kick game to more of like dribble handoff actions. And like you said, incorporating more back cuts. I think having Lively and Derek Jones as guys who can, you know, make plays in the middle of the floor in the short roll have opened that up for them. And then I think that also Derek Jones Jr.'s ability to attack closeouts has allowed them to sort of get a different look on offense, because, you know, he's not a typical 3-and-D wing. Like he's a guy who has struggled with his 3-point shot for most of his career. And this year has been pretty up and down shooting the ball, but he's extremely athletic. He has a quick first step and can put the ball on the floor. So I think having personnel like that makes you a little bit more versatile on offense, even if, the numbers and the efficiency aren't quite what they were last season.
Yeah, and I think it was a good win. I like that Grant's, you know, dribbling, attacking, and like the first play of the game, he found Lively. Guys need to learn that you don't always have to shoot that three. You can just pump fake, drive hard, and, you know, kick it out or hit Lively for the alley-oop. It doesn't always have to be ending in a three.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think Grant Williams, today statistically he had a pretty quiet game. I mean, I think he had 3 points, that one assist to Lively, but I do like the way that he's been playing. It seems like, you know, I think he talked about how he's lost, you know, 17 to 20 pounds since the start of the season. I think now he's finally starting to learn how to play in this, you know, at this weight again. And so he hasn't been a complete negative on the court. I mean, there was a pretty long stretch of the season where he was borderline unplayable, but I think right now he's been a little bit better. Still would like to see him produce more, but I don't think you could necessarily like fault him for his game today. I thought he was pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty solid game all around. But yeah, no, appreciate you letting me speak, man.
Yeah, no problem. It was great talking to you. I think you had a lot of good thoughts. I may also drop off now. So I apologize if I wasn't able to bring you up. But thanks for Alex and I'm sorry who spoke before this. But thank you to both of you guys for coming up and sharing your thoughts. And thanks for everyone for tuning in to another edition of Mavs Film Room Spaces. Great to get a win today against the Magic, the biggest comeback of the season. And hopefully the spark that we saw in the second half can carry over going forward and we get some more guys healthy. So we'll see you maybe after the next game. Go Mavs. Have a good night. Take care. Bye.